You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto, and we are glad that you are joining us on this fine evening. We do have a terrific show lined up. In studio with me, Paul DeMera. How are you doing, Paul?
Awesome, Steve.
And Art Factor is sitting there on the board. Art, everything good?
Oh, the sunshine. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's it feels like it's summer, finally.
Yeah, and we leave the show, and it's still sunny.
Yeah, I was in Kelowna last week. You were in Kelowna last week.
I was.
Yeah, I was in there up there speaking to the British Columbia Association of Insurance Agents, the kind of life insurance, not life insurance, the like car and house insurance guys, not
general insurance. Yeah,
yeah, they were fun. It was fun.
It's funny because our
Okanagan Grand.
Our family started a business in Kelowna, DeMera and Sons Insurance, back in 1923. My mom sold it after my dad passed away in 82, so I'm fairly familiar with the whole insurance thing. Interestingly,
they were good folk. The insurance folk can party, Art.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, because when you think of insurance, you think those guys light it up.
Well. You know, speaking at conferences, different groups will surprise you at different times. This was pretty good. There was some great hospitality suites. There was, our talk was brilliant. Actually, I did a co-keynote with Todd Maffin. We were talking about technology stuff, so it was kind of fun. It was interesting. It was a little nerve-wracking sharing the stage with somebody as knowledgeable as Todd, since normally it's just me and I can, you know, kind of fool people into thinking that I'm.
But you've got the you've got like the acting and the musical theater background.
Yeah, that's true, and I'm bigger than Todd.
So yeah,
does that help?
Yeah, that helps, right? I think I could take him if I had to.
You can bump him off the mic in case he tries to hog it too much.
Now, I'm glad you asked what's on the show today. We've got a great show lined up. We're going to be joined in just a few minutes by Colleen Hardwick. She is the founder of PlaySpeak. This is a fascinating new exploration of social media in action. Social media for social good. So Colleen's going to be joining us. We also have Anna Jen from Epson, who is going to be joining us to talk about their new label printer. And Rob Switzman is going to be joining us. He is with Rogers. He's their senior director of emerging business. They did one of their Rogers surveys on how we use technology and the internet. And I think he's going to say we use it a lot.
Indeed.
Looking at the news, I was just looking at a couple of things that were popping along in the news that came up, and I just have to find my news stories here.
Did you see the digital wallet one?
The digital wallet. No, yeah. I didn't see one. What's the story about the digital wallet?
There's a lot of movement towards this, but I guess there's an announcement I was just reading about that everybody's agreed to a format for spending money with your cell phone. So using a little near-field transmitter on the phone, you can walk up to a terminal and kind of tap it, and you pay for things that way. So you don't actually have to carry your wallet around. It's already big in Asia and Europe, so it's now being standardized here, and that's a good thing.
Can I tell you something cool? So I was doing this fundraiser 2 weeks ago, and yeah. I needed to buy like a door prize. So I didn't, and then I guess all the money went back to the Cancer Foundation, which was amazing.
Right.
And one of the things that he did in order to make sure that all the money went to the fundraiser was not to go through the bar that we were at, you know, through their machines or whatever. So I said, how am I going to pay for it? I don't have any cash. He said, no worries, I can take Visa. He had this little adapter to his iPhone, which was about the size of a Zippo lighter. He connected it, and it was a card swipe.
Yep.
And it all the information went through, and I was like, wow, I got an email receipt. And with cell phone reception,
transmission.
Yeah, you can do transactions anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you know what the make is?
I'm trying to remember the name. There's an organization locally.
Because I was down in
payment tech or something.
New Orleans, and the cab driver was doing that, because cabbies get absolutely slaughtered by the payment company.
Yes.
You know, and so he had his own, he basically went through, and he was paying, as opposed to like the 3.5% or 4% that they're being charged on credit cards, you know, through their affiliation. He was bypassing it, and it wasn't PayPal that he was using, but a similar type service.
Yep.
And so his transaction fees were like 2.5%, and it was just a little adapter that plugged into the bottom. And he wasn't on an iPhone. He was on an Android phone.
Yep.
And it plugged into the USB port of his Android phone. But he swiped my credit card. I signed on the screen of his on the screen of his phone.
Yeah, I signed too.
And and that was it. It was it. Oh, the Paul
PayFirma.
PayFirma.
These guys are awesome. Yes. They have a little adapter for your iPhone, and you can take payments. Great for people like cab drivers, anybody who's basically a single-person business and they want to be able to take payment.
What's the payment gateway then? How do they do it? How do they clear it?
They have an agreement. I'd have to look it up. But they have a system. Yeah, they have a system there. They basically do exactly what we're describing.
You know, you have the whole show to look it up.
Yes,
and then we'll come make back sure to that it. We mention it at the very end of the show. And this might be a good story for the future. You know, of all of the stories that hit me this week, it was the fact that there's going to be a Upliva. Do you know what an Upliva is?
No, but it sounds
interesting.
Thank you.
It's IKEA. IKEA, Upliva is IKEA for TV.
Oh.
IKEA is releasing a TV in Europe. And I'm sure it's going to be here soon enough. But that to me was the top story of the week.
Yeah.
Upliva.
But how are you going to
put
the
it on
TV
my
together
horse.
With that the little Allen wrench?
I don't know. The problem is, you know, you put the in their advanced TVs, they got built-in YouTube and Vimeo and apps. They're smart TVs. So they're going to have a whole bunch of
screens and big screens and little screens as far as the future goes,
well,
right? You know,
there's increasing rumors that Apple might not be making a TV. Mm. They might be saying
so going
that
the
it's
other
not
way now.
Work the other way. And if IKEA is stepping in, I can see Apple stepping up pretty darn quick.
Is it going to be made from plywood?
No, it's press board. It's
press
not
board.
Plywood.
Right.
You think
right.
it's plywood. It's got the veneer thing over the top. And but the cool part thing is you can get parts for it from a dispenser.
Right.
Reason to get those 50-cent hot dogs and ice cream, I'm in.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, and the little Swedish meatballs. You can get like 75 of them for a dollar or whatever.
It's a good deal.
Goods. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we are going to get serious. We're going to be covering a fascinating topic. You're not going to want to leave. Colleen Hardwick joins us right after this.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Location-based services are all the rage in the technology world, and Colleen Hardwick is the founder of PlaceSpeak. Thanks for coming in, Colleen.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Steve.
Now, PlaceSpeak is, you told me, it's location-based public consultation. So the bottom line is, you've created a social media site where you're going to listen to my opinion?
The whole idea is for people to be authenticated, their digital identity authenticated to their actual address.
Mm-hmm.
They prove that they live there. They are who they are. They say who they say they are. And then they're able to weigh in on issues of local relevance. So whether it's the city or the school board or TransLink or whomever that wants to consult with people because of where they live online, their information that they contribute, whether that's quantitative like surveys or qualitative like discussion forums, is going to go directly to the decision makers or policy makers to inform their process.
The site is www.placespeak.com, placespeak.com. So it's right now it's a primary lower mainland thing. This is where you started it. What caused you to begin this process?
Well, beginning in the summer of 2010, I was actually looking at the Arbutus corridor from the standpoint of transit-centered development and trying to think of how we could break the logjam around that area. The CPR and the city have been at odds for years, and it was abundantly clear that there was an opportunity for, I'm a big supporter of the idea of reintroducing streetcars into the city and the region. And when I talked to the city and I talked to the CPR, they both said the same thing. We're going to get nowhere because of, remember, the creme de la creme with the RAV line, mm-hmm. and this perception that there's a logjam and the public are against any kind of development there. And so I had been part of a visioning process back in 2006 where we'd gone neighborhood by neighborhood, Kitsilano, Shaughnessy, Carisdale, Marple, and went walked the line and blue skied. And people really were interested in seeing it develop. So I thought, how can we consult with people and prove, you know, that they actually are supportive of this?
Because in the case of any public consultation, that's our traditional method. The people who are against it are the loudest, and they show up.
And totally. So public meetings are gong shows, and only, you know, it's the NIMBYs or the ideologically bent or the naysayers that show up, and it's very difficult to get a broad perspective. A lot of the traditional techniques, as I discovered, things like doing telephone polling are no longer germane because fewer people have landlines, and the ones that have them don't answer them.
And why would they?
Yeah. Because it's always someone asking them a survey question or trying to sell them something.
No.
So where are the people? Well, the people are online. Well, how do we reach the people online because of where they live? Well, we don't have any way to do that. So that's when the big light bulb went on over my head. And I went, okay, well, we have to figure out how do we connect people to place, and then how do we legitimately communicate the information that comes from that consultation back to the decision makers so that we can actually move forward.
So people, in order to participate, are going to have to buy in on giving up some privacy. We have to say, okay, you can identify who I am. I'm going to be upfront with who I am. Because otherwise, if we don't, my voice doesn't carry any weight in this conversation.
Right. So what's happened so far, you know, with the city's done, City of Vancouver's done a fair amount of experimentation and online consultation, but it's anonymous. So you end up, especially if it's something controversial, like a real estate development that gets people up in arms in the neighborhood, you end up needing to have 24/7 moderation because to keep the trolls at bay. Mm-hmm. And there have been other experiences where they're even doing community plans where they get 1,500 responses, but 1,200 would be from the same guy, just gaming the system. So authentication is really important. But we came up with an interesting solution that I like to joke is the separation of church and state, feeding into our current GOP friends south of the border. So people authenticate themselves. They will jump through multiple hoops to prove they are who they say they are. And we've started with the low-hanging fruit of email and home phone audio pins and cell phone SMS pins. But the system verifies them, vets them, but does not pass on that information to the proponent. Mm. They've been counted as being a green dot on a map within the boundaries of that area. They may share their name and their location, but not their personal information, like their address, for example. So in that way, we kind of make things easier for the proponent from a Freedom of Information Act perspective, and also for the participant who's chosen to jump through the hoops to prove they are who they say they are.
Now, when people come to your site, what they're going to be met with is primarily a Google map, which has a whole series of green dots on it and a couple of little flags. The green dots, I'm taking it, are people who have registered who want to have their voice heard.
That's correct.
And so are they identified as, if I sign up, am I Steve Dotto, or am I going to be, you know, some name that I come up with, like a
username? No, you got to be yourself.
But I'm going to be myself. Okay.
So you sign up, you've got your profile, but only you can see your profile. Other than that, you're an anonymous green dot on a map.
Okay.
Except when you connect with a topic, that means you're counted on that topic, then your identity becomes visible to the proponent. You can choose in your privacy settings to shield your name and your picture. Mm-hmm. And it certainly that wouldn't be captured in surveys, but I'm talking about discussion forums here. Mm-hmm. Because we don't want, you know, if I take an...
You don't want people being attacked.
Or having their house egged or their dog poisoned.
That's what I mean.
No stalking here allowed. Yeah. We've, I think, quite carefully and elegantly separated the two out so that people are able to be known and counted. Because this isn't just fill in a petition that's going to go into a black hole somewhere. This is the real deal. This is, you know, the local government or whoever the decision maker is on the other side. You got to look at it from their perspective, too. Evidence-based decision-making is the call of the day, right? It's important, whether you're a politician or a bureaucrat, to be armed with the best possible data. And so they need to know, on the other side, that you are who you say that you are. But they don't need to know the personal details, and I think we've dealt with that quite elegantly.
Now, I also see flags. That look like place markings. Are those issues that are under consultation in that area? How do I go and find them?
Yeah, that's correct. So if you browse issues,
Okay.
or you, there's, I guess you've
You can click
some,
on.
I'll do some screen grabs when we do this, but people can.
But there's
it.
Also should be a ticker
Vancouver's
along.
Vancouver's transportation future. I've just clicked on one, and so I could connect to this topic.
Now,
am I limited by the geography which I'm identified to the conversation?
Yes, indeed you are. Good. So let's do a search there for the New Westminster Master Transportation.
Hey, you said it properly. Most people say New Westminster.
They're not from here.
I'm from here, and I often say it. Okay, so I'm going to browse for a find topics near you. There we go. Okay, so I've clicked on find topics
so
near you. So I'm playing with it now.
This is an interesting one because this consultation is limited to people that reside within the boundaries of New Westminster. It's further segmented into a dozen different neighborhood units, and so when people register it sorts them into each one of those neighborhoods.
Okay.
So when when the report comes out. It'll be able to say, you know, we have received X number of responses from people that reside. Now, how many we've got in there? We've had 1,622 people view. We've got 133 that have actually connected, and we've had, 78 surveys completed.
Okay. Now, what is the number it's kind of arbitrary, but I'm just wondering what volume of critical mass does this start to make a real difference to the decision makers?
Well, again, we're matching this up against what they would get from public meetings. And this is not seen as replacing public meetings or any of the traditional process, but rather augmenting it.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have seen another one that is current and actually just happening this afternoon is the Oak Ridge Center consultation.
Okay.
When they had their first meeting, they had about 400 people show up in person. And we did a concurrent online public meeting and or open house and had about 800 people show up online.
And right now there's 1,534 that are engaged.
Cool. That's good.
Yes.
So so we know there's always about a 10-to-1 ratio of lurkers to participants, as you know. So a lot of people will come, but that's fine because we informing and notifying people of what's going on is the first step of consultation, right?
Yep.
Then the second step is receiving feedback and listening to that feedback. And so what our ambition is as we continue to develop this, and again, this is a year old since just prototyping. This is a new exercise. The objective is to transform the lurkers into participants.
Yeah.
And I think as people become more comfortable with the security and privacy around their identity online, that will speed up. We've observed, of course, that there are differences demographically in people's willingness to participate.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always, you know, it's the old crossing the chasm model. You start with your
yep.
innovators and your early adopters.
Early adopters, exactly.
Now, how do you determine what is PlaceSpeak worthy? If I have an issue with dogs pooping in my neighborhood, that's probably going to be different than I'm probably not going to be able to
a
get
new
that.
Bridge, right?
Yeah, a new bridge, a new crossing of the Fraser.
We now have launched the commercial version of the platform. Up until now, we did a series of pilot projects. Stepping back a little bit, April 1st, I got a commitment. From the National Research Council, IRAP, to do technology validation around this concept. And the City of Vancouver agreed to provide some pilot projects for us to work around. So again, this is me bootstrapping out of my basement with mostly a couple of MITACS interns and some undergraduate interns proving the thesis. So we cobbled together the prototype, tested it over a series of pilots last summer, delivered the results at the end of August, and then in September began our real pre-commercialization phase where we started working, for example, with the Vancouver School Board. And so fast forward to where we are right now, we now have a platform where proponents of consultations can create and sign up and pay for on a SaaS model. You know, we've made it very affordable because
yep.
we
SaaS,
want...
SaaS for our listeners is software
as a service.
Yes.
So you can pay as little as $20 a month or, you know, we give a discount if they, you know, it's $20 a month or $200 a year. You know, and there's a bronze, silver, gold, platinum. Well, the platinum is really the enterprise model, which won't scale, but where we're providing consulting services on top of that, whether that's writing the surveys, writing the reports, moderating. You know, where an actual human being is involved as opposed to the software.
Okay, and so then these individual projects then become will become
topics,
as you call them. And then people, if you're in the geography, you can register and you can have a comment. Looking at the density on your map, it's obviously something that the urban center is really is engaging a lot more than the suburbs.
Well, no, again, there's a direct correlation between the red pushpins, which are the topics, and the green dots.
Where the people are, right?
Duh. So if you go out just a little bit, you'll see now we've got that great grouping around New Westminster.
Yes.
That has just happened in the last week or 10 days since they launched this Patella Bridge consultation.
Okay.
Before that, there were maybe 20 dots because I had started, I was working on the Urban Future Survey, recreating research that my father had done. And that takes out in all of the municipalities in the region. There's 22 in Metro Vancouver. So we'd started to spread out by trying to reach people broadly across the region, but it really does come down to having things up close and personal for people to interact with.
Has there been a consultation in Gibson's?
There has been a consultation in Gibson's.
I'm asking because I'm looking at the map and there's a big cluster in Gibson's.
Gibson's a lot was one of our pilots last summer with their harbor plan.
Mm-hmm.
And God bless Michael Epp, who's the planner in Gibson's, because he saw the opportunity and got right on board with it. And so you'll see there's that nice little cluster up in Gibson's along the Sunshine Coast. If you go out a little bit, you'll even see there's one on the west coast of Vancouver Island in Tofino.
Oh, yeah.
Tofino got in touch with us in January.
There it is, yeah.
And said, can we run our tsunami siren warning test on PlaySpeak? And I said, okay, come again. How would that work? Well, what they did was they segmented the Tofino Peninsula into half a dozen different zones and then asked people, could you hear it? Could you hear the siren? Yes, no.
Right.
Polling question. And then, in the discussion forums, could you elaborate? Well, right. I wouldn't have heard it if the radio was on or I was sleeping or whatever. So they were very pleased with this, and as was I, because it was an application of that we hadn't even considered.
This is fascinating. We're going to keep our eye on this. Fast forward me by 5 years just now and tell me, what is success going to look like for PlaySpeak in 4 or 5 years from now?
Well, we're spatially moving outward. The plan is to go Vancouver, Metro, and we'll move up into the interior and onto the island, get BC dialed in. Now started talking to Calgary and Edmonton, talking to Ottawa, Toronto. By the end of this year, I'd like to have Canada dialed in.
Mm.
In a couple of weeks, I've been asked to go to Belfast in Northern Ireland to do a TEDx talk there, okay. And I'll be meeting with
that'll
Belfast.
Be very...
So I'm hoping that'll get us our beachhead into Europe.
Yep.
And I'm talking to people of all places, Houston, Texas, about the first steps into the United States. So if this year is Canada and we start our beachhead into the rest of North America and Western Europe and Australia, the English-speaking world is a no-brainer. But at the end of and when we have our API developed, which is something I can talk about, it's an application programming interface, which will allow third-party websites to interact with our pre-vetted user bank, then it has the chance, if we do this right, to really become ubiquitous as a tool for people to engage with any kind of issues that are based geographically.
Colleen mentioned her father in passing. She's more or less, I think, very much so following in the footsteps. Her father, Walter Hardwick, a very important political figure in our province's history, founder of, amongst other things, the Knowledge Network, and obviously very concerned about how we learn, how we communicate. And it looks like you are, I'd say he'd be very proud of what you're doing with this. It's going to be something that we're going to keep our eye on very closely. Thanks for the time, and we will put links to this on our website. This was Colleen Hardwick of PlaySpeak.
Thank you very much.
DottoTech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for DottoTech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. DottoTech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Rob Switzman joins me now. He is the Senior Director of Emerging Business for Rogers, and they have released a report on how we use the internet or what we're using it for. Rob, thanks for joining me today.
You're very welcome.
Now, you guys, in your innovation reports, you take a look at how Canadians use technology in a variety of different ways, and you're taking out a pretty big enchilada this week.
Yes, yes, we're looking at the internet. We're looking at both at how they're using the internet and how they hope to use the internet in the future.
And what did you find that? You didn't find that internet use is declining, did you?
No, we've confirmed that, you know, the internet is the kingpin of people's lives. And what we've really seen is not only are they using the internet the way they always have to look up things and communicate with people, watch TV, but increasingly they're looking and hoping to use it to do much more and kind of create new rich internet experiences that will enhance the way they live.
Now, one of the things that I kind of got from browsing it is the internet is less becoming... It's just more in kind of woven into the fabric of our lives today. It's not something unique or something special, something that we go to. It's just there all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. The internet really kind of is, you know, is a backbone. It's there. It connects people to people, connects people to their homes. It connects people to things around them. And with all these connections that are created, allow people to do things differently. You know, there's some great examples of that we're seeing out there right now that, you know, the Canadians in the Innovation Report have kind of confirmed they're really interested. Everything in from controlling their homes, you know, 40% I believe it is of Canadians, you know, think that by connecting things like smart fridges, they'll be able to manage their households more efficiently. And that's just because they'll be able to, see what's happening in their homes at any time, turn on and off their lights, do all that type of stuff, kind of creating new ways of doing things. They'll even be able to see when their kids come home at the night. Same thing could be said in, retail experiences.
One of the things, though, to me that kind of jumps out on this is the smartphone has to be the thing that is changing our use of the internet. It's because we have access to it everywhere now, meaning that we start to use it everywhere. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. Smartphone is one of the many tools in the internet. You know, there's many connected devices, but obviously the smartphone frees us from from specific locations. So it is a great enhancer of our internet experience.
So you're mentioning the connected appliances. That's one that's kind of I've always kind of been slightly skeptical of, but you actually think that people are going to start scanning their milk as they put it in their fridge and then taking a look and seeing if it's fresh as they're at the office on their way home?
I mean, this is an evolution. You know, it's not. It won't happen all in one day. But really, what we're seeing from many years ago to now is people are connecting more and more things. And once you connect them, is when the experiences start to enable. So it's starting off with being able to do things. You know, turning on and off your lights. You know, seeing when people come and go. Those are real practical ways that are better. That are a better experience than what we did before. And then as more and more technology becomes connected, we'll find better ways of doing things. You know, there's examples, that with the one you just mentioned, but, there's Grocery Gateway and those type of companies out there that allow you to order online. And it's really about the connections between all these devices just make the experiences easier, more seamless, and really kind of people find, more efficient ways of running their lives so that they can have more time to do other things.
So you asked as a part of this study what people wanted to do more of online, and there was some interesting statistics on that around healthcare as well.
Yes, there were stats around healthcare that looked at people found that if they had technology available to them, they would be able to manage their diet diet and exercise more efficiently. You know, the examples of that were things like connected scales and connected things like glucose meters. All these things and real-time information right to your smartphone telling you what's actually happening both in your diet and your life, and it gives you more information, real-time information, to be able to do things more efficiently.
I always thought that there was a connected scale that was out, I don't know how long ago, just about 2 years ago I saw it the first time, and it would tweet out your weight every day, which I don't know whether that helped people from the perspective of actually following the weight or being mortally embarrassed that they weren't going down as fast as they should or they were going up because everybody, it was being tweeted to their universe.
The great thing here is it's whatever works for you. And then the internet, the idea of connectedness gives you choice. And I mean, before we never had the information. Now we have the information. And the key is everyone's going to have choice and you're going to figure out what works best for them and what doesn't work well for them. And, for me, more peer pressure is better than none for me to do things like lose weight and exercise more and a better diet than other people. They just want maybe a note to their mother would, or their wife would do the job.
Now, you're in your job day to day, you're a pretty connected guy, obviously. Was there anything in the report that surprised you or made you look at things differently?
Generally, there was right across the board, you know, excitement for the possibilities of the internet. You know, people associated the internet or kind of put the internet above, in terms of importance in their lives, above such mainstream things as alcohol, coffee, and chocolate. About a third of Canadians said they would, you know, give up those things before the internet. And, you know, really that just tells you it's, you know, the internet is becoming more, as we talked about at the beginning, a fabric to people's, you know, part of the fabric of people's lives. You know, there's always interesting stats here and there, you know, whether it be, you know, there was some interesting comments around work, you know, how, you know, people would consider leaving their job, you know, for a company that allowed them, if they could get work for a company that allowed them to work from anywhere. You know, those are, you know, interesting things about how, you know, technology choices are really impacting, you know, key things that people might do on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, there was a Forbes report several years ago that second only to salary was the ability to telecommute was the determining factor on the how appealing a new job was at the executive level. So that, you know, the people are looking for those changes in lifestyle, and that is all wrought, of course, by the technology that we have online. Is this report available for anybody to read, or just the highlights?
Yeah, the full report is available
on our newsroom.
Oh, I see it right here in the newsroom. What I'll do is I'll create a link to that at our website. So if anybody's interested in finding out how we're using the internet, how we're looking at it, and the statistics on what we would rather give up, which is fascinating. I'm not sure I'd rather give up coffee, but anything else, pretty much off the. I'd give it up.
Canadians did draw the line at you know, sex and bathing.
Sex and bathing. Bathing I can do without. I'm going to leave it right there right now. Rob Switzman is with Rogers. Their report will be online. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
You're welcome.
That is all the time we have for this week's show. Paul DeMera, we gave you an assignment at the top of the show. We were talking with Art Factora, who was spending money on an iPhone. Not by clicking and buying, but by swiping his card on somebody else's iPhone. He made a credit card payment. What's the name of the company?
Payfirm is one of the companies that seems to be doing this.
Does it work with PayPal?
I don't see that. I see it only working with credit cards, all the major ones, including Amex.
Okay, and so, but the payment doesn't come through PayPal, so it's going to be, you're going to have to sign up for an account of some sort.
You're going to have to be a merchant account. The little reader is $99, and I'm just looking at the pricing here. It's very competitive and fairly inexpensive, so good for small business.
Good for small businesses and services, people that are out and about. If you're doing, if you're cleaning gutters, you can take payments there. If you're doing, you know, if you're doing little odd jobs, mowing the lawn, maybe I'll go around, mow the lawn.
Hey, it's wireless, right?
and does it plug into the, is it iPhone only, or does it work on other platforms as well?
Other platforms as well. So it basically works on
same reader.
So they've got Bold, HTC, so, you know, those devices.
It doesn't plug into the
jack of the box, audio jack.
It plugs into the audio jack.
Well, if you think about a credit card reader, it's just a magnetic tape head, right? It's a cassette, like the old cassette decks, little thing.
Yeah.
And your card is a magnetic strip, and it reads that, and so it looks like an audio signal.
Okay. Well, yeah, there you go.
Very cool.
We'll put a link up to that on the website as well if people are interested. Art,
that should be big with buskers. Imagine if you just had a guitar and your
there
bus,
you go.
You're like, oh, sorry, no change.
Hey.
Oh, don't worry, I can take your credit
scan
card.
A credit card, just have a little scanning machine. That would be a good idea. I'm not sure I'd want to give a busker my credit card information. And there's going to have to be a level of security that people believe that the information is being transferred directly through.
It's fully PCI compliant. No data is stored on the device. It's all transferred. There's an app you download, and it's very cool. I've actually seen this demoed live. It's very, very cool.
I do like that idea. I need to thank all of our guests, Anna Jen from Epson, Robert Switzman from Rogers, and, of course, Colleen Hardwick, the founder of PlaySpeak. That is an interesting story, one that we will return to at some time in the near future. Next week, we're going to be taking your calls and questions. So if you have any questions that you've been saving up, give them to us next week. On behalf of Art Factora, Paul DeMera, I am Steve Dotto, and we will see you next time right here on Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Do you have a comment or question for DottoTech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. DottoTech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me now online from Toronto is Anna Jen, who's the Director of New Ventures at Epson. How are you doing, Anna?
Great.
Thanks for joining us. Now, you folks, I see, are now kind of getting back into the whole label printer game.
We are, but we're coming out with something that's very innovative and creative compared to the traditional black-on-white type of label printers you might have seen in the past.
Well, it's funny because I remember one of my fondest memories as a child, and I don't know why it's fond, but it's fond probably because it was just weird, and I think a lot of kids have this memory, at least in my age group, is my dad with his old Dymo label writer. Did you ever use one of those? Did you ever see one?
I did. I remember as you clicked, your hands
you pushed
got
down,
tired.
Yeah. And it punched, what it did was it punched a die through a piece of plastic, which caused the plastic to stretch and turn from either blue or red or black to white because it was stretched. It just stretched this plastic. And then there was this super strong stick at the back that you'd stick it on. My dad used to label everything in our basement, all of his jars with screws in them, he'd be labeling. So I kind of have a fond memory of label printer. This one reminds me a little bit of it, but of course it's way cooler.
Well, certainly there's been a lot of advancements since then, and your hand won't be sore in the future, because with the Epson Label Works, it's an electronic, everything's done using thermal technology, and the nice thing about this is you just type in your what you want to print out, and you can even select a bunch of fun symbols and frames to kind of add a creative touch to the labels before printing them out.
It actually looks like a kind of strange BlackBerry because it's got the big keyboard, which I can imagine you'd probably end up typing with mostly with your thumbs as you're holding it in your hand, a screen where you see the display of what you're working on, and it prints out. Now, is the ink and label separate? Do we have, like, does it print in color? How does it work from that perspective?
Well, good question. It actually comes with a tape cassette or a tape cartridge in which there's a ribbon that determines the text color, mm-hmm. and then there's the tape color itself. So we've got a lot of creative combinations.
Okay.
Like gold on black, so you could have text in gold and the black background be black, which looks really great for cable and wiring.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have like a black on metallic silver or red on white.
So you basically choose the cartridge to meet the task that you're doing. If you're putting something in a, if it's just, you know, I guess if it's you know, something that you want more colorful labels on, you're going to choose a different colorful label. But if it's really just basic, you can just go black and white.
Exactly. And not only that, but with these types of quote tapes, it's gone beyond tapes. For example, we have one where it's actually a fabric. Mm. And it's an iron-on, so you can actually text, or you can type in the text for, let's say, your kid's name, you know.
For camp. Drawing on the labels with the drawing on your name on all your T-shirts.
Exactly, or on your school uniforms, or on any school, like jackets that you might bring to school and the kid, you know, forgets it and leaves it out in the schoolyard. Now it can find its way back to the owner.
Oh, there you go. That's a good idea. I imagine that, you know, if you think about the person that's responsible for, you know, if you're somebody that does laundry for a small sports team or something like that, that would be a great way too, especially if some of the, you know, some of the outfits all look all the same.
Exactly. Or if you just wanted, just even in terms of organizing, I know this is going to date me, but remember Garanimals, where you could actually help your kid dress by saying, this top matches this bottom. So you can actually create, kind of using the fun symbols, you can create something that says, you know, snowman matches snowman.
I'm feeling old. I never saw Garanimals.
You never? Well, actually, I think that's kind of from about 20 years ago, where
I had kids 20 years ago. Maybe I just didn't spend enough time with them. Okay.
Well, I think the fun thing about our LabelWorks tapes is there's the iron-on. There's also a glow-in-the-dark.
Yeah, so I see that. So that'd be great for, like, when power goes out for labeling your, for example, I would go through and label all of the circuit breakers on my panel.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Or if you're down in the attic, or if you want to label emergency supplies,
mm-hmm.
Something that, you know, you want to find at night, or emergency kits. So those are really nice, handy, glow-in-the-dark are kind of nice and handy to have. And, of course, we've got, you know, a variety of other colors, too, to kind of, there's a gold on clear, which is great for if you want to label gift cards and give it that extra professional
look. Give it that classy
look,
like you care.
Of course you care.
Now, there's two different models, and they're not very expensive. I think they're, what, $39 and $49, so they're fairly reasonably priced. What's the difference between the two models?
Well, one of the big differences is the backlit display on the LW400.
Okay.
That's, you know, you talked about your dad labeling in the attic and basement. Well, this is perfect for those types of environments where it might be very low light. Mm-hmm. But the backlit display, you can see it nice and bright. So you can be labeling your cables underneath your desk.
Yeah.
And that backlit display will really come in handy.
And with that backlit display, if you want to do some labeling while you're in bed and don't want to disturb your partner, that's perfect for that too then.
Yes. There's also a lot of fun you can have with a backlit display.
Just don't be labeling your partner.
Well, you can be, if you really enjoy labeling your, like, I've got a lot of stuff in my basement that needs to be labeled. You know, this is something that's now kind of almost fun instead of a chore.
There you go. Well, you know what? The Dynamo was fun. I remember back in the day that it was fun making labels. And the label works kind of catches that flavor. It's going to be fun. We've had label printers that attach to the computer, and they're very flexible and they're very useful for, you know, labeling files and other things. But this seems to me to be kind of more a fun thing. It's something you can do with a kid or you can do it by yourself, but it's also something that you can just, you don't have to fire up the computer and set up and worry about all the different formatting options that you have to do and what program you're going to print out of. It just takes the confusion away from the process.
Exactly. Everything's self-contained in the handheld unit. It's got over 300 creative symbols,
mm-hmm.
Which is a lot of fun, as you talk about making labels with your kids. Now, if you want to label your pantry, you can select the cute little symbols
for
to go along with the coffee.
Spicy
or the little
food
tea
and
bag.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Tea bag symbol. There's also, gives everything a very professional look. You know, somebody wants to not only be organized, but they want to do it in a creative way. Everything is self-contained in the LabelWorks LW300 and 400.
We got to thank you guys, because we're giving away one of your premium units, one of the LW400s, to some lucky listener. So I, on behalf of all of our listeners from Dottotech, thank you so much. And this is Anna Jen. She is the Director of New Ventures at Epson. And, of course, you can find more information on the label printer and all the other Epson products at epson.ca. Thanks, Jen.
May is photo month at London Drugs, so consequently May is photo month here on Dottotech. And Nikki Castengay is the production manager at London Drugs of their photo department. How are you doing, Nikki?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
Well, thanks for coming. I'm good. Thanks for coming in. May is photo month. Is that like an international designation, or is this something London Drugs just decided?
Well, I believe it's actually national. It's not just
get
for London
town.
Drugs.
No. Really? Well, that's something you're going to take advantage of, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely we will.
Now, I want to talk to you. You guys got some courses coming. Well, first of all, you've got some software that you've developed to help people managing their photos, and you've got some courses to teach us to do that. So why don't you fill me in on that whole process?
All right. Well, our courses are going to start on Saturday, May 12th,
uh-huh.
and we are going to start with photo books with our Home Edition software, which you can either download right from our website, londondrugs.com/photolab, or you can go into a store and get a CD, and we'll give you the software on the CD that you can download to your PC.
You can install software on your computer using a CD?
Yes, you can. I know it seems a little archaic.
I haven't done that in so long. I might do it just for old time's sake.
Well, it depends on how computer savvy you are. Some people like to have a CD that they take home with them rather than trying to download something from the website.
Seems like a lot of trouble. So the software, what's your software called?
Home Edition software.
Home Edition. And what does it include?
The Home Edition software includes ways to be able to make photo books, calendars, greeting cards, Canvas gallery wraps. We actually have a new version coming out within the next week where you'll be able to do magnets. You can do bookmarks. We have more calendar sizes.
So tying into all of the different photo gifts and the photo gifts. Now, in the past, I think people, if they wanted to do a lot of this stuff, they would go into the store and actually do it at one of the kiosks,
yes.
Right? So is this replacing a lot of the different functionality that used to happen at the kiosk?
It's not replacing it. It's just in addition to that. Okay. If it's
more convenient. A lot of pressure sitting at a kiosk trying to decide on what pictures go in what month type thing.
You can, and it's a time-consuming process. And this way you can start it on a Monday, work on it again the Sunday. Yeah. You can leave it for a month or two, come back to it. It can be as long or as short of a process as you want.
So the course starting on May 12th, are they all, you've got a couple of weeks of courses happening. Are they all the same or are they covering different topics?
No, we are going to cover different topics. Saturday, May 12th and Saturday, May 19th, we're going to be covering photo books. We're going to do it twice a day at every single store.
At every single store?
At every single store. So just swing in and find out what time the courses are going to be held, and you can sign up for a spot. There's no obligation.
Okay, and how are you like parceling off part of the photo department to do this?
We do have a home edition kiosk on site at every store, okay. And some of the stores that have a little bit larger of a footprint will actually have a laptop set up to one of our large screen televisions. So if they have 5-10 people there, they can actually every customer can actually see what's going on.
Okay, so they're going to learn how to design their own calendars and maybe get some ideas for making gifts. Or
absolutely, absolutely. We start with photo books. We're going to do greeting cards on Sunday, May 13th, and Sunday, May 20th. Those ones will be three times a day, probably about 15-minute intervals. And then on Wednesday, May 16th and Wednesday, May 23rd, we're going to do calendars twice a day.
We're going to do calendars. So what sort of thing am I going to learn? I guess photo books is the most complicated of that whole process, isn't it?
It can be. Honestly, with calendars, you can put a picture on every single day if you want.
Really?
Yes. That's a lot of pictures.
I know this. That would be 365 pictures.
Very good. Plus the pictures that you could put on the top of the calendar.
377.
But you can put multiples on the top as well.
More.
Lots more.
So is that... okay, let's go back to the photo books again, because I like the idea of the photo books. I think one of the things that people might hold them back from actually purchasing photo books is when you print a single photo, it's not a very big commitment.
Correct.
When you decide to print a whole book, it's a big commitment. And every photo's got to be done right, laid out right, color corrected to look good. And so I'm always concerned that I'm going to have one really crappy picture in the middle of my book. And even if people don't, it's only one picture, but it's going to spoil it for me. So how do we make sure that the book is excellent?
We take some of that away. We take some of the concern away from you because we do color and density correct every single image.
Okay.
So all we're asking of you or all you need to do is organize all the pictures that you want into one file on your computer.
Okay.
That's really all you have to do, or onto a media drive.
Now, do we do a little more creative work with the photo books? I mean, am I captioning the photos and doing that kind of stuff?
You can if you want to. It can be as easy or as complex as you want it to be. You could do one image per page. You could do 30 images per page. It's really as creative as you want to be with it.
And you've got all the templates and layouts.
Absolutely. And you can do your own templates.
Okay, so how long does it take me to learn to do that?
We are doing half-hour sessions to start, but if you ever have questions, you can come in and have a discussion with us. You can make your books on our home edition kiosk. Again, it really is something you want to do at home because you can't save from our home edition kiosk, but you can save as much as you want when you save it onto your computer at home.
Okay, and the types of books that people can print, you've got the whole range, everywhere from softcover to hardcover.
We're releasing more hardcovers, and we're actually coming out with a 12x12 photographic album, which is really impressive to see. This is an actual lay flat album that you can see right from the edge of the page all the way to the spine, as opposed to the coffee table.
Full bleed.
Yes, absolutely.
Of the photos. And what's the range of price for the...
The softcover photo books start at $9.99.
Okay.
And our photographic 12x12 album goes up to $119.99.
Okay.
Plus $3 per extra page on that larger format, but...
And is there any benefit to printing multiple books at the same time? Like what I'm thinking is, okay, if I'm going to print off one book, give it a real good look over, and then decide that might become gifts for the family, and then I can reprint it and once I know that it's perfect.
Yes, we will offer discounts. Definitely. Definitely.
Multiple copies.
And especially with calendars too, because a lot of people don't just want to do one. They want to do 50 or they want to do 70, and we will definitely talk to you about discounts for that too.
Now, you've got this crazy idea of sending paper greeting cards to people.
People still do that.
Oh, man. I just don't get it. Because the online ones are so convenient. And typically, you can have dancing mice on the online ones, which...
This is true, but this is something in the mail, as archaic as it may seem.
It's kind of exciting to receive.
It is kind of exciting.
And you can put a check
receive.
Inside, which would be exciting too, as
Definitely.
Opposed to an email money transfer, which is you know, just so clinical.
Well, we can put a gift card inside too.
Yes.
So, now, and we have two different kinds of greeting cards that we offer. We offer the archival bond that we do at our press lab, or we have one that we do on our photographic machines at every single location.
Okay, so what's the difference between archival bond and the photographic? Tell me what that
is. Photographic paper is true photographic paper. So
okay.
You're actually getting the colors, the density, the
so
brightness
to it. So it's for a real photo,
yeah. Absolutely. Whereas the archival bond is more towards a paper stock rather than a photographic
page. Is that better if you're doing like higher volumes? Is it less expensive?
Absolutely.
So things like wedding things, if you're doing 100 or 150, that's going to be better than doing the one or two off greeting card that might be a birthday card or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. A birthday card, an invitation, something on a smaller level, Father's Day, things like that.
Okay, so that's pretty cool. And again, the course for that is a little bit shorter, is it still a half hour?
One's only about 15 minutes, and it's really what you want to learn, because we can go through text, we can go through templates, we can go through frames.
Okay, and finally, calendars. It seems a strange time of year to be thinking about calendars, Nikki. You should have your calendar by now.
You can start our calendars on any month of any year.
Oh, that's going to mess people up. Some people, it's like the school year. They're going to go to that full year school year.
Yes, I heard about that.
Which could be difficult.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not in school anymore.
Yes. I wish I am again, but it doesn't really matter. So this is happening for three consecutive weeks, May being photo month, all of these courses. The software is free. You can download it and maybe familiarize yourself with it beforehand. But definitely, we'll have all of these dates posted on our website.
Wonderful.
And I think I might be interested in taking the photo book course.
Wonderful. And we have some added incentives starting on May 11th. Our flyer offers 15% off of our Home Edition products.
Oh, anything that the software is free, but anything that we buy from the Home Edition.
You will give you 15% off,
so
absolutely.
So some new mugs for me, because I like the mugs.
The mugs are on sale right now.
Oh, are they?
They're on sale right now.
Oh, mugs are fun. It's always fun having your face sucking coffee out of your head. It's a good thing to do. Or your dog's head, or whatever head you want.
Whoever you happen to like.
Nikki Castingate is the production manager at London Drugs. We will have links to all of these courses on our site. Or, of course, go to londondrugs.com. It's all referenced there as well. Thanks, Nikki.
Thank you.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
As we mentioned, we are giving away a Epson label printer. How do you win the label printer? Well, you come to our website at dottotech.com. There you click Win an Epson LabelWorks label printer. So we're going to be giving one away. The contest is going to end May 25th, so you have a little bit of time to enter. We encourage you to visit our website and check out some of the other offerings that we have besides just giving away stuff. You know, you can go there just to learn. You can go there, listen to our existing podcasts of this or all of our previous shows as well. I've started posting a whole series of little how-to videos and snippets of how to use things on our computer. I've been doing these screencasts, and they seem to be popular. People like them. So if you have any suggestions of things that you want me to show you how to use, you can drop that off. You can send that to us through the website as well. What's the address? I'm glad you asked. Oh, go ahead, Art. You can do it.
Dottotech.com.
Oh, man.
Magical.
Polished.